David Morata is the president of Morata Wealth Management, online at moradaonmoney.com. And just a terrific resource for this local audience, but also his stories are picked up and covered nationwide. And you know, David, we're talking today about success and ideas for success. And after reading that letter I just read from Bruce Saunders of Albemarle County about basically pillaging the so-called rich and the 1% and all that, you know, you wonder why people even bother. Why don't they just throw everything into a big pot and let the government invest their money and manage it for them? And then all of our worries would be gone. It's very disheartening.
Yeah, it's certainly there's a big difference between the most successful and productive people in life and the people who are not successful and productive. And you know, the very first, I find it fascinating. We get to work with a number of very successful people, small business owners, entrepreneurs, university professors. People are really at the top of what they do, and very productive, not only in their careers and in their finances, but just in life in general. They have a can-do attitude that that does things. And it's amazing to me, the biggest difference, I think, and the number one discriminator between those who are successful and those who are not successful is what psychologists call an internal locus of control. We would call it simply taking ownership or being a self-starter, or really just the difference between believing that your actions will have the greatest impact on your life and your experience, or luck and circumstances outside of your control. The big oil, the government, the market returns,
the rich,
yeah, the corporations are, and it's completely outside of your control. So why even bother doing anything?
But that's a defeatist attitude, and I really do believe that, you know, even people from humble backgrounds who were not privileged, have been able to be successful in life. And even if it was just moderately successful, you know, they were able to meet their own goals and to live independently. Success doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be a millionaire. And it's what I wanted to talk about, was really defining success. I mean, people can be plenty happy and content in their life, even if they're not, quote unquote, the rich.
Yeah, it's true that success is living a rich and fulfilled life. It's doing what you're called to do. It's being able to handle whatever life throws you. You can be success and be a starving artist if you're doing what you want to do and you're productive at what you're doing. Success is not defined monetarily, although monetary success often accompanies successful people, because money's just a placeholder for other things that they can do.
977-1070 is the phone number. Let's go to the phones right now. David Morata is our guest, and Greg has been waiting. Hi, Greg. Welcome to the Shilling Show.
Hey, how are you all? Yeah, success for me is just having a couple of days off to go play in the woods with a chainsaw and the tractor and stuff. But my question to David is this.
Hold on.
I think.
Hold on, Greg. It's just interesting to me that you define success as being out with a tractor and a chainsaw. That's not a day off. I just wanted to clarify that. That's a very productive person who gets to go do something else that they love to do.
Well, I'd rather do that than waste my time sitting at the beach or playing golf, I can tell you that. Because it's no fun to do those other two things.
That's great.
In my opinion. But anyway, the question I have, I think there's an intersecting sort of matrix, if you think of a matrix, and that socialists, the true socialists, do not like the idea of private property. And this group of intellectuals and socialists know that there's a lot of private property, and indirectly through mandates from the federal government all the way down through the state government and local government, they are absconding our private property by a million paper cuts, just like Obamacare. And, you know, UVA had to get rid of Obamacare for the spouses. Well, now Albemarle County's paying for that. So guess where that money comes from? Our property. And they're not going to be happy until they get 90% of the cow, i.e. our houses and farms and businesses. And I'll just sign off and get your comment.
Greg, thank you, and be careful with the chainsaw.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I heard, I think it was Buckley, who said that liberals like to be generous. They like to give away other people's money until they get scared, and then they like to give away other people's freedoms. It tends to be very self-centered, and it tends to be very what they can take from other people rather than what they can do for themselves. It's a very sort of external locus of control, where they're really trying to just influence these vast forces outside of their control, because it's the only thing that's going to have a positive influence on their own lives.
Greg, thanks for the call. That leaves the line open at 977-1070. David Morata is our guest. We're talking about ideas for success. So you talk about the internal locus of control, which is very important in many ways. One of the things I think people have a hard time with is finding the balance of living for today, enjoying themselves today, but also being aware that there is a future.
Yeah, that's actually the third one that we're going to get to is being willing to defer gratification. Yeah. And it's the difference between having a future-oriented time perspective, if you will, and being willing to. In finances, they can determine how successful people are by the psychology study of just giving a young person one marshmallow if they want to eat it now, or two marshmallows if they're willing to wait a few minutes. And that willingness to defer gratification for a greater gratification later is truly what it takes to be successful, because it's your own actions to defer that gratification that will produce success. You know, it's interesting. I learned at a very young age, because I played chess, I learned to have patience and not make moves too quickly. Mm-hmm. And you do have to have those kinds of successes where you learn that it's in your control, and the patience that it takes to do that is what it takes. And people who don't have that experience, if they're never given the chance to work hard and gain success, or to defer something and gain something more later, but they're just given things, never develop those reactions that are what makes an internal locus of control grow strong.
And that's really the problem that I see today, is there are so few people who have matured or have been raised with this concept or matured into it that they're pretty lost.
I've become my grandparents, unfortunately, in the sense of remembering what it used to be. Mm-hmm. But I do know that there is a brain difference between children today who grow up on so many pads and you know, screens and instant gratification, and don't have the ability to sort of sit and listen to someone actually telling a story, or they don't have the ability to just sit and patiently and think. Or they're moved around so much that they don't have a time to just be in their own mind and to be with their own thoughts. It's one of the advantages of homeschooling, I think, is that you can actually remove some of these screen time. And I heard one psychologist, and they said the number one thing that you could do for your children was to reduce screen time as much as possible and as close to zero as possible in their early formative years, because they need the feedback of the physical world, and they don't get that from a screen.
Yeah, that is brilliant advice. All right, 977-1070 is the phone number. The Shilling Show will continue here with David Morata and you. It's 1070 WINA. I'm so glad you're here. I thank you for making the time to share with us each and every weekday from noon to 2. This is the place to be. And by the way, if you need to send me an email, it's robs@wina.com. Shilling Show returns after news and weather. Shilling Show continues here. It's a Tuesday edition. We welcome all points of view on this program, including yours at 977-1070. Ellie stands by, taking your calls politely and professionally. And we continue here on talking about ideas for success with David Morata. He's online at moradaonmoney.com, the president of Morata Wealth Management. This one I love, because in some ways it's counterintuitive, and in some ways we have been brainwashed as a society to believe that the opposite is true, that the ideal for all of us is leisure. But working hard at hard work. Oh, I just love this.
Yeah, my one of my favorite quotes is by Armand Hammer, and he says, "When I work 14 hours a day, 7 days a week, I get lucky." I love that quote, because it really shows this the silliness, if you will, of the internal locus of control. Is it a lot of what we do, and there are some things that are outside our control, and you know, the prayer is to know the difference between the two. But there's an awful lot that's inside our control. And you know, I think for Christians, it's much easier to take the seventh day off if you've worked hard the other six.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the interesting thing about the Sabbath is that we were intended for hard work. We were intended for work 6 days a week, And if you do what you love to do and what you're called to mm-hmm. do, it doesn't really seem like hard work. It seems like a joy. And I think that's part of the difference too. A lot of people are so slaves to the money mm-hmm. that they're working jobs they hate because it pays better than the job they love by a few bucks. And that's the thing that I've noticed about the very successful people that I meet is they work very hard, but they love their work.
Yeah.
And they're not working at a job for the money. In fact, for most of the very successful people, the money doesn't even matter. They mm-hmm. they're living so frugally under their means. You know, they're living off 10 or 11% of their income because their income is so high. And they're frugal super savers because they believe that even saving is within their control and living below their means. So yeah, the hard work, there's a joy of work, there's a fundamental calling, I think, to be productive. And I think people who are just working for the sake of the money really don't experience that.
You had a great quote in there having to do with using the time that others waste.
Oh yes. Most people get ahead during the time that others waste.
Yeah.
I've heard it said that for most small business owners, what they do 9 to 5 is not what makes the business successful. It's what they do 5 to 9. and I think that's true because it takes that extra mile to sort of make sure that your business can stand out mm-hmm. among the competition, and especially when you're getting started and building a reputation for quality work and integrity is so important. That really matters. Yep.
This whole concept of finding joy in the work is also important, I think, because there are so many people now who have been deprived of that joy by the government, being put on dependence of the government, being encouraged to take food stamps when they probably don't need them, and so many other so-called government benefits, that they are being literally deprived of the joy and the gratification of hard work.
Yeah, I saw a bumper sticker recently, or a T-shirt, and I finally found the quote from it. It's from Bob Knight. It's, "Everyone wants to win, but not everyone is willing to prepare to win."
Mm.
And it's that preparation. In our family, we call it grit, mm-hmm. which is just the stick-to-itness of sitting in the chair and getting a job done, if it's whatever the job is, or going and doing the work, whatever the work is, and not deferring it to later. Really, you can take the first three principles that we've pulled out, having an internal locus of control, working hard at hard work, and being willing to defer gratification, and you could simply say, you work now.
Mm-hmm.
It's you. You're the one. Mm-hmm. It's all up to you. You have to work at it. It doesn't come easy, and you have to do that now and not later. In financial planning, there's 1,000 applications, one of which is, you know, for every 7 years mm-hmm. you delay your retirement, you actually cut in half the standard of living you'll have in retirement. And finances depend more upon what you do than what the markets do. You have to save and invest. You have to live below your means. Those are all the things that really matter in financial planning. The money takes care of itself. The markets bounce around. They're outside your control, but it doesn't matter because over the long period, they really do what they do, and they grow.
The next one we want to talk about is understanding your calling, your vocation, narrowing and focusing what you do best. It takes a while for some people. It certainly took a while for me, although I've had a series of successful careers in many different things that just went linearly, and I never knew I was really going to get into any of them. They just kind of happened to me, but I know I'm unusual.
Yeah, I was 40 when I made an incredible sort of discovery about myself and my personality, and I thought I had been a diver and I was a skimmer, you know, in terms of, mm-hmm. I like to do a lot of different things. It's just I am intense enough that I do them deeper than most people do them. And so I thought I was more of a diver. Barbara Sher is one of my favorite authors on this topic. And one of her books that really influenced me was called I can do whatever I want to if I only knew what it was. And it's just trying to figure out what your calling is in life. And she's got an introduction, and you read it, and then you jump to the right chapter. And that's what helped me learn about who I was and what I was. There's another group. It's a Christian group. It's called Your 1%. And what it really means is in the 360 degrees, it's your 1 degree. In the 360 degrees of what you could head, there's 1 degree that you should head, and that's the direction you should be heading, and you need to focus in on what that is and figure out what that is. And it's different for different people. That's the beauty about calling. But when you figure out what your calling is, You stop berating everyone else for not doing your calling, and you just start doing your calling, and you realize this is how I fit into the world. This is the role I play. This is what I'm really good at. And you stop wasting a lot of time and effort on things that you shouldn't be doing. And I think the most important thing is to know when to say no. You need to know what not to do, and you need to know what to do. And if you're doing something just for the money, well, sometimes you need to do that. Mm-hmm. When you're young and you've got a family, sometimes you need to do things just for the money. And if you do something for the money 9 to 5, then from 5 to 9 in the evenings, you should be doing what you should be doing. You should be doing what your calling is. You should be figuring out how to get that as a business that will pay you every day to do what you love to do. And most businesses can be started on a shoebox, and they can be started in the evening hours. So that's a great way to get started.
Having integrity with people. Well, you won't go far if you don't have that.
Yeah, and I've kind of combined two different things here. One is just having integrity, and the other is how important the relationships that you have with other people. You know, we're in fee-only financial planning, and there was a NAPFA conference where the speaker was talking about how when you're in fee-only financial planning and you have less conflicts of interest, you can have the words that you say and the actions that you do and the thoughts that you have and the heart that you have all be lined up in helping people. And I don't think that's true just of financial planning, fee-only financial planning. And in the financial services world, there are a lot of people who are trying to part you from your money, and they don't have integrity. But that's true in almost every discipline and vocation we have, including nonprofits and governments. Mm-hmm. You'll find people in those industries who don't have integrity. But when you have integrity, you just don't have to. You don't have to remember all the different lies you told. You can just say things from the heart and from the truth. It's a lot less work to have integrity than it is not to have integrity. And having integrity, you know, it means also being forgiving of yourself and others. It's having the courage to say, yeah, I made a mistake. I did that one wrong. Mm. I'm sorry. Let's see what we can do to correct it. It's treating everyone like you'd like to be treated. It's not doing anything that wouldn't make your mom proud. It's, mm-hmm. There's 1,000 sort of campy ways that you can say what integrity is. And maybe the clearest thing is you just know it because you feel it comfortable and at ease. And when you're doing what your calling is and you're doing it with integrity, you really don't have any regrets at the end of the day. At the end of the day, you've worked hard at what you're supposed to be doing, and you've done what you should do with integrity, and you've helped people as your primary motivation.
977-1070 is the phone number here on The Shilling Show with David Murata. And when we come back on the other side, we're going to get to 21 suggestions for success that are basically outside of, at least directly, not related to finance, just in life. But as David said earlier, these things all somehow tie together in the long run. So stay with us, The Shilling Show, and David Murata back in a moment. Final segment of this hour here on The Shilling Show with David Murata. He's online at muratahonmoney.com. We're talking about ideas for success, and I want to get into these 21 suggestions for success, and we'll kind of pick and choose because I don't think we'll get to all of them by H. Jackson Brown Jr. Who is that, by the way? I mean, we do know somebody who has a similar name who's in music, but I'm sure it's not that Jackson Brown.
Jackson Brown Jr. was a very successful. He was on the New York Times bestseller list for, I think, 2 years running. And his books are basically books of maxims for success and for significance and for dealing with people. They're very folksy, but they're wonderful. And this list is one of my favorites just because just everything on it is, yes, that these are truisms. That are old and your grandparents would have loved them.
So let's jump in with number one, because this is kind of critical, isn't it?
Yeah, and number one is marry the right person. This one decision will determine 90% of your happiness or misery. Yeah. For those of you who are in your 20s, there's a very successful book by a University of Virginia psychologist in which she says, basically, there's three things you need to get right in your 20s: a person, a place, and a position. And what she means is you can't spend your 20s just fooling around with various people. You need to find the person you want to spend your life with and begin building a life. And then you need to have a place, meaning you need to have a place that you're willing to settle down and build a community and have friends and have a church community and a social circle and all of that. And then you need to find a position that, that your 20s really shouldn't be finding yourself, because finding yourself without finding your calling and vocation just doesn't work. And so I think that's, again, it's a little bit counterintuitive to the youth culture today that you need to find a person, place, and position. And yet that's actually what will bring you the biggest happiness and success in life.
I remember listening to a tape. It was a success tape when I was a teenager, probably. I think my dad gave it to me. And one of the things this guy said, which ties right into the next one I want to talk about, number three on the list here, is he said, hey, if you're hiring contractors and they come out to your house, pay them 10% more than their bid and watch what happens. Now, I know it doesn't always work, but his concept was basically number three here in maybe a little different way.
Yeah, number three is give people more than they expect and do it cheerfully. We do this in our industry, and that a lot of financial planners have a secret sauce. They're afraid if you knew how to do it yourself, you would, and then you wouldn't need their services. And they trouble the prospective client by saying, you know, I understand how to do this, and so we use this secret sauce and in our finances, and that's what really brings the value. We don't believe there is a secret sauce. We believe everything that we do, you could do for yourself. We try to give away tons of free information, and it's a strategy of just trying to give people more than they expect from you. You know, when a couple comes in and talks to us, you know, even if they don't want to start as a client, we'll give them an hour of just saying, here's what we would do with your finances, and you could go do it yourself. And by the way, you enjoy this stuff. Why don't you go do it for yourself? Because you're good at it, and you're doing it for yourself, and that's good. So giving away more than people expect, mm-hmm. I think, is the right way to go, and always trying to be generous in that. Just because I don't think you can compete in any industry on price alone. You really compete in every industry, I think, based on the service and experience that you provide.
Let's talk about the attitude of gratitude, which is something I heard many years ago when we went out on a retreat one day, and there was someone teaching it who talked about that. And I have never forgotten it. I work hard. It's not always easy, but try to be a grateful person, you know, and I think that that goes a long way, doesn't it?
It does, and it also helps to surround yourself with people who encourage that, who ask the question, you know, what are you grateful for today, rather than, you know, what are you complaining about today, mm-hmm. and trying to figure out, you know, what really are the things that we have to be grateful for. Another way to look at it is there's a phrase that I heard, and again, it goes around in our family, and when someone has some complaint like, my computer, you know, locked up three times today, mm-hmm. and you say, that's a very developed country complaint, it means you have a computer.
Yeah.
And you were able to sit on your computer. You didn't have to go work manual labor in the fields, and your computer locked up. So it's a very developed country, modern problem to complain about. And that will just sort of bring you up short and make you realize that the complaints that we have are so small in comparison to the complaints of the rest of the world, and we have so much to be grateful for.
These are tied together in the list, and also I think they go hand in hand, loyalty and honesty.
Yeah, I think it matters tremendously being honest. It's hard to be honest. Mm-hmm. One of our 10 safeguards for your safeguarding your money is to have an advisor who will tell you exactly how bad it was in the markets, exactly what happened. He won't try to sugarcoat it. And so when energy, for example, last year went down tremendously, you just say energy went down tremendously. That's mm-hmm. We invested in it thinking that energy would be a good investment, be a good hedge against inflation, and the price of oil, you know, dropped precipitously. Will it happen again? We don't know. We hope not. Or we hope it does. I don't know. It's good for the economy either way, but energy prices are certainly down, and that certainly hurt the entire energy industry last year. So just having an advisor who's honest and surrounding yourself with people who are honest is, I think, extremely extremely profitable.
Just a little over a minute left. Boldness and being courageous.
Yeah. In life planning, I have noticed this from both life planning and from experience of people that we work with, and that is that you regret. There's more often if you regret in your life doing something, it's usually a terrible marriage or something illegal that completely shifts your entire life into an area of disaster. So if you regret doing something, it's either illegal or it's a bad relationship. More than anything, people at the end of life regret the things they didn't do, the chances they didn't take, the time they didn't dance, the class they didn't take, the interest they never got to explore. And so I think that's the thing to be bold and courageous about. So if you're trying to decide, should I do this or shouldn't I do this, ask yourself two questions. Is it a bad relationship or is it illegal? And if the answer is yes, steer clear of it.
Yeah.
Other than that, take a chance on it and go ahead and try it and figure out if it's something that might enrich and enhance your life. And the more experiences that you can have like that, I think the more fulfilled and successful a life you'll have.
Excellent advice from David Murata, online at muratahonmoney.com. David, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.